Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Kara. And this week, our episode is...
A salute to Don Cheadle.
That seemed pretty in sync.
It'll be fine. And yeah. I can smoosh it together as close as we can get.
We'll figure it out. Carrie, here we are at the end of season two.
Oh my God. You know what I love?
What do you love?
A season that is half the length of our first season.
Just like, nope, I was trying to think of a TV show.
I can tell you, okay, so we actually did follow the Mindy Project on Hulu's model. So when the Mindy Project got picked up by Hulu, the fourth season was 26 episodes. And then the fifth season and sixth season, they went down to 13 apiece. So,
because it was originally on NBC, right?
Fox,
right.
Yeah. The first three seasons were on Fox and then it got canceled.
That's cool to me now that like shows have like lives on other networks.
Yeah, I think it's pretty great. Something that did come up is writer Guy Branum, whose book we will at some point discuss. He wrote for the Mindy Project, but he only started writing for it once it was on streaming. Oh. And they hadn't yet figured out residuals as with regards to streaming yet. And so as they were like negotiating the contract, he was like, well, I won't get anything from the original. So like, as this show goes into some form of syndication, but it's on streaming, what happens here? And I don't remember how it got resolved, but it was an interesting like inner workings of television writers
behind the curtain
and trying to figure out their money.
I love that. You know what else I love?
Tell me.
Is our fabulous fans on social media.
I love that people actually listen to us talk. Because I don't know why. I'm, you know what? No, let me not feign like we aren't interesting people. We are interesting. I'm glad you listen to us. I don't need to do a false humility. You can deal with it. We are who we are. We're pretty interesting. But it turns out our listeners are pretty interesting too. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We asked this week on social media for some questions. And so I'm going to pick a few here for us to answer.
Nice.
This is a great question. And I figured we would talk about it anyway, whether or not someone submitted. Carrie, what was your favorite book that we covered in season two?
I think it has to be Gabrielle Union. It's probably been clear, listeners, that like Kara and I get a little tired of reading a book a week or every 2 weeks, depending on how it goes. And that's exhausting. And I remember like kind of not looking forward to it. Like I like Gabrielle Union, but I was like, okay, I'm going to read this book. I don't have strong opinions. I hope I get a good 10 Things I Hate About You story. And you know what? She gave me that, but she gave me so much more.
That you didn't even expect.
Yeah.
That Prince story is just, I loved you on ER.
I've seen everything. Like there is just this like all-knowingness to Prince doing that too.
I love that. I love it so much.
Like that man just sits and watches ER. Well, watched ER. You know what? He's watching ER in the sky right now.
He is.
I don't believe in much, but I believe in Prince watching ER somewhere.
I love that for him and for you.
Yeah, that was definitely, that was by far my favorite. And she's writing more and I can't wait to read it. Like we said it in the episode, but give Gabrielle Union the world, like please. Whatever she wants to do, I'm fully invested in. What was your favorite book that you read this season?
Gabrielle Union was my favorite to like converse with you about. But I think my favorite one that that I personally read was Alan Cumming.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. It was just like I didn't really know what to expect going in. And I was really just a fan of his work and didn't know a ton about his personal life. And so it was some people I like wouldn't care about that for. I would be like, I want to hear about your work and like, yada, yada, yada. But he told the story in such an interesting and compelling way. And I really feel like I know a lot more about him now. And when I see him in things, I'm going to be like, there's my friend Alan Cumming.
Yeah, there's so much warmth there. The one that I enjoyed listening to you tell me about the most this year, I feel like was Judy Greer.
Judy.
Like, I think we just had a lot of good conversation around this person who
we did
has a complicated view of herself, but like, of course she does. And it makes me think a little bit about Issa. Like, we talk a lot about Issa's body image stuff in that episode. Mm-hmm. And I like, while I wish she felt differently about herself, it is also like a nature of this job that they all have. Like,
you have to be so focused.
I kind of understand all of their body dysmorphia, like all of celebrity having weird body issues because of that. I think I want for all of them to acknowledge where it comes from. And it comes from this like pressure and systems and things like that. But
yeah, absolutely.
We're getting there. More and more celebrities are getting comfortable talking about systemic challenges.
Yes.
But I also think, like, I look at Judy Greer and I'm like, she is from a different time in Hollywood.
Totally.
And has always, like, has only been cast in roles where she's playing, like, a second fiddle to someone.
Right. Who's, like, not supposed to be as hot as yeah. Jennifer Garner, as whoever, you know?
Yeah.
Even though she's gorgeous.
Important question. How many of Ben Affleck's long-term relationships has Judy Greer co-starred in films with? Because,
well,
J-Lo, J-Garn.
J-Garn.
When are Ana de Armas and Judy Greer making a movie together? I just hope that that's on her list of things that she's trying to achieve.
Trying to get all of Ben Affleck's exes.
Yep.
Honestly.
She wants to be the sidekick to all of Ben Affleck's exes.
I hope that happens. Another question, which I think we sort of talked about last week in the Amy Poehler episode, a book you'd flat out refuse to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great question. And we've touched on this a little bit with Aziz Ansari
yeah.
in the past. These questions were asked before that episode was published. So yeah. that's why. But like, I have no interest in covering books by people who we deem predatory in some way.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what it comes down to, is like, I don't need to give voice to people that have done harm.
I don't need to talk about someone just because they're controversial.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think I watched Alan V. Farrow recently, and there's lots of excerpts yeah. in that from Woody Allen's audiobook.
Yeah.
And there was someone else that someone on Instagram asked us if we would ever do. And it was like that similar kind of thing. Like, they were a very controversial figure and had like a lot of allegations of abuse against them.
Yeah.
And that's just not something that I really feel, one, I have anything to contribute to the conversation about. And two, I don't want to like platform that person, even if we're decrying them. Like, I don't want to.
Yeah. And we can talk about those people in passing as their stories relate to maybe somebody else. But totally. I think the other thing to consider is that, yes, we could get some of these books at the library, but we tend to purchase the books we cover.
Yeah.
And so that means giving money to these people.
Right.
And so I'm not going to do that. And I also, like, sometimes people read the books because we talk about them. Like,
right. And I don't want to like recommend.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes a lot about like, we have great and loyal listeners. And while our audience is small but mighty, I don't want to give any credence to things that, like, if we wouldn't have fun reading it or talking about it, if we feel icky in the process, we're just not going to do it. Like,
yeah. And that's the thing that you and I talk about a lot, is like, well, should we do this? Should we do that? Like, should we try harder to do blah, 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 blah. And ultimately the answer that Carrie and I always come up with is, we do this for fun. And if we wouldn't have fun doing it, then like, let's not do X book, or let's not, you know, talk about a certain topic.
And I think that some of the most fun I've had this season is reading books by a lower tier of celebrity, or like a less well-known name.
Yeah. And be like, not as well.
And so sometimes, like, I get it. I respect it. Sometimes our listeners don't listen to those episodes because of it, but like, those have been the most fun to read, are people who are adjacent to this world, but maybe aren't super in it.
Yeah. People might have to go, who?
Yeah.
And then you say, you know, they're in blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. But like,
yeah. And I've had a lot of fun with those stories this season.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like the biggest name, if they also have something interesting to tell us, is great. But like, I'm never reading Woody Allen's book. And I own Aziz's book. I'm never opening that book again. Like it's gonna make me like squirm and feel physically sick to think about how people who have made some really bad choices present themselves as though they haven't.
Sort of to that end, sometimes if I just personally don't really like a person, I don't have any interest in reading their book. Like, I don't think we would ever do like Lena Dunham's book.
Oh, no. So here's the thing. I've also read Lena Dunham's book.
Have you? I owned it at one point, but I never read it.
I threw it across a room. I was so angry, so livid.
Wow. Did you finish it?
Yeah, I finished it.
Like out of spite?
Yeah, out of spite. And I really wanted to, kind of the same thing that happened with the Busy Phillips book. With Busy's book, she was painting her husband in a really terrible light. And I needed to know how that story finished. And while I was really unhappy with the result of how that worked, I needed to know. Because sometimes like you read a book like that and you see these are real people, but in some ways they're characters, right? Especially to us who we don't know them. You see a character like perpetually making the wrong choice and you want to see if there's ever anything there. And Lena Dunham is the most flat character of a human being that's ever existed. She just continually makes the wrong choice. And
continues to fail upward.
And we just keep giving her shit. Like, no, don't buy those ugly clothes that aren't in inclusive sizes. Yeah. Don't support Lena Dunham. I mean, do what you want.
So that's our answer.
I had a lot of fun watching Girls.
Yeah.
So that's our answers. People we don't like and people that we deem as bad. And I know that that's complicated, but people who are predators are bad.
So it's actually not complicated.
Yeah. So no.
It's complicated, but also it's not.
Yeah.
Carrie, this question relates to something that you and I were talking about earlier, which I think sort of leads into your question that you wanted to ask of us.
Mm-hmm.
What titles would Carrie and Kara give to their own memoirs?
Oh, great question. That's a lot. I have to think about this one.
I think I have my answer to this.
Go ahead.
I like a one or two word title. I feel like it's like catchy or whatever. I think I would pick something that like was an adjective that has been used to describe me.
Yeah.
My initial thought is like honeysuckle or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Which listeners, for years, Kara was just the sunniest, warmest, most optimistic person you would ever meet. And we would call her honeysuckle because of it, because it was just like, it was just flowery and joyful. And in recent years, Kara's tried to reject that moniker, but again, is also still the friend you go to when you need someone to enable your bad decisions, because she'll just be like, yeah, it'll all work out.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe honeysuckle, or like, who has that book and the title is just like Loud or something?
Oh, I don't know, but that might be a runner for me.
White and Loud.
White and Loud.
The Carrie Foster story.
The Carrie Foster story. Yeah, that's high up there. I have been thinking a lot about, I have like two phrases that I've been living by in my life lately. One is work medium, play medium, instead of like work hard, play hard.
That's good.
That's kind of my vibe, is like,
that is your vibe. I love that.
Work medium. And like, also like, I'm not going hard, like out in my job or out in the evening, like just real medium. And then the other one is what I lack in skill, I make up for in enthusiasm. And I think that applies to every aspect of my life. I ran a 6-hour marathon.
She did. But everyone, let it be known that Carrie ran the New York City Marathon in 2017, 2018.
16, 2016.
Oh, great. 2016. That's like a real thing that you did. Like, that's
it is incredible. A real thing that I did, but also like I was very slow. It was dark out by the time it finished. And I'm really glad I did it, but like, I'm not a good runner. I'm not a fast runner, but I did it and it was really fun. Work medium, play medium is true there as well. I love singing and I'm so bad at it. Like, and I just doesn't stop me from doing it. It's every aspect of my life is like, I'm not really good at this, but I'm going to have a lot of fun doing it. Now, some people would say I'm not that enthusiastic. And I would say that you don't have to be smiling to be enthusiastic.
That's very true.
You can, you don't have to be like radiating positivity, but
right.
So those are the things I lean towards, but
yeah.
Also just white and loud is, is pretty accurate.
White and loud, colon, Amy Poehler, date me.
That is her type.
White and loud.
The other option, an old reliable, is just to call your book me. When in doubt, name your book me, because multiple celebrities have done it.
All of whom I think probably think they're the only person to have done that.
Yeah.
Like Elton John does not know that Katharine Hepburn's book is also called me.
No idea. Even though he references Katharine Hepburn in his book.
I'm sure he does not know.
No. And also, like, that's what so much of celebrity is like, they just don't know because they don't have a person that's honest with them. This is what my actual new career should be, is like, let me work for celebrities and be like, you can't do that.
Be like the regular consultant.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you what things cost in a grocery store. Like, let me help you with those things. When you, like, before you post something dumb on the internet, share, let me tell you, like, no, you can't say this. You can't do that.
Cher really said, what did she say? Was it about George Floyd that she could have saved him?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Mark Wahlberg also thinks he could have stopped 9/11 from happening if he was on the plane. So celebrities, you need us.
It needs to be like a therapy thing, like once a week, because you can't do it all the time either. You have to live your life normally. And once a week you meet with your clients via Zoom or like via coffee. And you have to be like, this is what's going on in the world. They're like, I wanted to tweet about this. Is this an informed opinion? And you say, no, Cher, you can't tweet that you could have saved George.
You know what? I should actually, invest in like making an algorithm that helps like find keywords to keep them from doing it, so that they're actually just like paying for an app to download on their phone of like, don't say this. Like I need to make an app that's like, just shut up.
A Silicon Valley tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
With your,
oh my God,
celebrity app. It's like Raya
Zuckerberg, I'm coming for you.
You know how like it, in order to be on Raya, you have to be like a certain level of famous?
Yes.
It's like you have to be a certain level of famous to use this app. You have to have like absolutely a certain number of followers, mm-hmm, so that you can.
Mm-hmm. The same way of like when you get 10,000 followers, you get the swipe up tool,
yes,
on your thing. But this, it like automatically downloads of like, I need to sell my stuff to Zuck. I need to sell myself to Jack. And like, here you go.
You would sell out to big
download
like that?
This.
I mean, I guess you have to if you want to be.
I mean, here is the thing. I talk a big communist liberal game, but when there's actual money involved, I don't know if I'm going to be so principled. I know myself. I'm sorry. If I can have a house with a pool, I'm selling out.
That's fair.
If I have enough money that I don't have to work and I can stop working medium, and then it's just play medium. That's the dream.
Play medium.
Work none, play medium.
Gary, to this end, you had a great question for us.
Okay. Yes. So here is a question that I have been thinking about in recent weeks. Pick one chapter from your life for your memoir. One chapter that would have to be included. What would that chapter be in your memoir? It can be a phase of life, if you have a title for it. Like, talk to me about a moment in your life that would be included in your memoir.
Well, I think you know what it is for me.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's a chapter that I could talk about with some humor, but also some honesty, and would probably honestly span over two or three chapters.
Yeah, you could use it as the frame for your story. You do now have to give a little bit of context.
Yes. So listeners, this, I would call this chapter, if I had to give it a title, I would call it My DUI.
Mm-hmm. Your metaphorical DUI.
Yes. For clarification, I personally have never received a DUI, but I liken this time in my life to Reese Witherspoon's DUI, because it was a catalyst for change
absolutely
in my life. and a lot of things changed for me all at once. And I feel a very much before this time and after this time in my life. This was around the time that I came out. I was changing careers. I had been working in an office and like freelancing by night, working in an office during the day, freelancing by night. And I made the switch to full-time freelance. My family was also going through a lot of changes at this time. I had, you know, personal things going on, family things going on, professional things going on. And what I learned essentially during this time, which I guess would be the lesson of this chapter and this book as a whole, was what was my job and what wasn't.
Mm.
And what I needed to hold on to and what I needed to let go of. Oh, another thing that was happening during this time was that I was separating from a lot of old friendships that weren't really
serving
me. Yeah,
you like,
had
like a pretty big friend breakup.
Yeah. So yeah, sort of like learning to navigate the world without these people, with my new knowledge of myself, with these changes in my family, with my new job. I refer to all of this collectively as my metaphorical DUI. And that is what my chapter, I think I would pull a quote from the audio of Reese's DUI.
Yeah.
Like,
this is beyond.
Yes. Like, quote, this is beyond, colon, my metaphorical DUI. And then I would start the chapter.
Is the title of your memoir just This Is Beyond?
Oh, it might be. And the foreword might have to be about Bo and Yang's lip sync.
And yeah, you have to sort of like explain and break down. Honestly, like by the time you're writing your memoir, Bo and Yang
will be so famous.
Yeah, we'll write the foreword or we'll like write the thing for your book. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it so much. What would your chapter be?
Okay, your answer was so much more real and serious that I may have to...
I could have done a joke. I mean, yours doesn't have to be.
No, okay. So here's when I originally thought of this. I was just thinking about what a profound experience it was to start my teaching career at the same time that Instagram was created, which is... so dumb. So this is too.
But honestly, a huge cultural shift.
Yeah. Well, I do. I think that's like maybe how I frame it as that. But like, it represents a time of like me figuring out my identity as an adult. And honestly, like what it was like working with people who were like really only 2 to 3 years younger than me. And I was like supposed to be an authority and like figuring out how to deal with all that. But it honestly, starting teaching at the dawn of Instagram and having a teacher Instagram where I posted pictures of kids when they fell asleep in class and tagged them. Like we didn't have rules yet for how we were supposed to do social media with kids.
Yeah.
And I just like made fun of them on the internet to get,
like now you could literally be fired for that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like you can't do that anymore. And like, right. I would never, I would never post about a kid now, but I was also like 22 and didn't know clear boundaries. And also like, there's a thing that happens with young educators a lot where they like pride themselves on their close relationships with students as it relates to like, I know, and I understand these kids and I have a very special dynamic with them. It's like, that's cool. But like,
all of that has a different meaning now.
Yeah. And also like you're their teacher and you have to figure out what that means. Yeah. And like what the difference between boundaries versus like being an authority in the room. Like you don't need to be like the boss of the space. This is not a teaching podcast. you don't need to like be in charge of every kid and like be an angry teacher, but like you can and should have clear boundaries about what you will and will not talk about with students, what like how you interact with them. But that was my initial thought. And it does feel very silly in compared to your like life-changing moment.
I think both of our lives would make very interesting books.
I do. It's so interesting. A thing about your life is that you had a pivotal moment where everything changed. I don't think I have that. I think I have like a lot of slow little changes and now I'm just kind of the person that I am.
Honestly, probably healthier.
It makes it hard for me to sort of explain how those things happened.
I see that.
Probably the biggest change, though, is the teaching in the dawn of Instagram.
Yes.
I don't think that the dawn of Instagram was the part that did it, but like figuring out how to be an adult and figuring out, it's such a, so much of that like time in your life, like a lot of other people, their jobs in their 20s are spent with a lot of other people who are also in their 20s. And you sort of like get that. And I spent most of my time with the kids I was teaching.
Carrie.
Yes.
Another part of what brings us together today is the incredible Don Cheadle.
Yeah, we have to salute him before we send him on his way.
We do.
So let's take a moment. Kara, what's your favorite Don Cheadle performance?
That's a great question. I wish I could have seen him on stage in Top Dog Underdog.
Oh, I bet he was great.
I bet he was excellent. Maybe this is like a pretentious thing to say, but anytime I really like an actor, I want to see them on stage.
Yeah, I get that. It is pretentious, but it's also true because you want to know if they're like what kind of good actor they are.
Right. And because I like work in theater and like I have worked with some people who, I guess I've worked with some people who are famous, mm-hmm. and it's so interesting to know that person as the like monolith that they are, and then to know them as like a regular person.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, you know, put your socks out for dirty laundry at the end of every night, just like everyone else. But yeah, I feel like when you see someone who is so versatile and so commanding on screen, I always want to know if that presence translates to the stage.
Yes.
I would have loved to see that. I know that is pretentious of me to say that, but
I think it could be so much worse, but it's not.
That's true.
I think it's House of Lies for me, a show that is kind of a mixed bag, but he is captivating on it. I think House of Lies is a good show. I say it with a question mark because it's like kind of underrated and people don't talk about it a lot, but like it's very funny, but the stakes are really interesting. And it is trying to do some really interesting stuff around Don Cheadle's family. Like he has like a very interesting work life where with like Kristen Bell and Ben Schwartz and Josh Lawson, like they're all doing their own thing. And that's like a very funny show. But then there's this whole other dynamic that is happening with his character's name is Marty Kahn, with like Marty's dad and his kid who is going through some gender identity stuff. And like, I think about, yes, it wasn't that long ago, but it was, and it's not perfect, but it was like doing something kind of before a lot of people were talking about trans issues and sort of non-binary stuff. Like, and I'm sure upon rewatch, there are things that I'm like, oh, I don't know that you had the right people in the room to talk about this, but
they were trying to talk about it.
They were trying to talk about it. And it's just, it's a weird show, but Don Cheadle is so good in it.
You and I, who were talking about how everything made pre-Trump has like a different lens to it.
Yes, absolutely. We were, and it was just in the Amy Poehler episode.
Yes. I think there's a really interesting little like window of time on like cable TV.
Yeah.
Specifically, because House of Lies is on Showtime, right?
Yeah.
Like
Don Cheadle is a Showtime king.
He is. I would say maybe like 2011, 2012 to 2016, there was a lot of really interesting TV being made in that time that like,
yes,
like you said, didn't quite have the right people in the room for it, but like the ideas being explored were like new and interesting. And because streaming platforms were being more readily available, it was reaching a larger number of people, like not just people who had cable and who were paying for those premium channels.
Yeah.
And I think Don Cheadle sort of fell into that niche sort of perfectly. And he is such a commanding presence on screen. Like I always feel calm when he's there.
Yes.
Like, I feel like he is in command of whatever is going on.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. Yeah. I agree with you. I think there was this window of time where there's like the safety, particularly around like social issues, there's like the safety of the Obama era presidency as though it was like this beacon of progressivism. And it let creators sort of branch off and create kind of different stories because of it,
mm-hmm.
in a way that, I don't know, it'd be curious to look at network television around the same time. Like what seasons of Grey's Anatomy were we watching from 2011 to 2016? Like,
yeah.
What years of that, like, how does that look differently? Because the creative landscape did shift so quickly to a lot of like television as a response to the Trump presidency.
Yes.
And I don't think all of that was effective, but there was like, the point of it was to be like, oh God, we kind of missed this thing. Like nobody saw it coming.
And yeah.
That nobody is often debated, but
yeah.
The people who had power did not see it coming.
The balloons at the Javits Center.
Balloons at the Javits Center. I talk about it every day.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to me. And I love that our king, Don Cheadle, was a part of that in some ways.
Yeah. And that he's had careers on both ends of it. And looking at, like, Don Cheadle has been working for so long.
His IMDb page, I mean, the reason that we can do such short 6 degrees of Don Cheadle is because he's been in everything.
He's in everything. I think we've learned maybe a flaw of this is like, we have to choose someone who's been in a little less to make it a little harder on us.
Yeah. We went from someone who's been in nothing to someone who's been in everything. And
we really pivoted.
Yeah.
But I just rewatched the first Ocean's film, Ocean's 11, for the first time in a long time. And I forgot Don Cheadle is like playing a British man in that. Like he's doing accent work. And it's such a, especially in the first one, it's such a small part. And I'm like, this is wild. Like he just booked this and like, he isn't to watch it now. He's like one of the most famous people in that movie, but like,
he's like a name.
He's just one of many in it.
But like, I'm sure on the DVD cover, he wasn't one of the like eight names at the top of the DVD cover. But now you watch it and you're like, shit, Don Cheadle's in this.
Yeah. It's kind of wild. It's like, that's the thing. He's just been working for so long and has created so much content and is great.
I wish Don Cheadle would write a book. I would read the shit out of that.
Oh my God. I feel like he absolutely could. Don Cheadle is having a moment, and not just by us, because think back to the Oscars a few weeks ago and the way people talk about Don Cheadle when they see him on screen is fantastic.
Yes. Indicative of everything you need to know.
Like everybody kind of sees him as like an interesting, perfect, funny, sexy man. And like, I'm here for it.
Is in the way that Reese Witherspoon is universally beloved, is Don Cheadle that?
Yeah. Oh, I think here's the thing. I think Don Cheadle is the version of that I actually find appealing. Because he's also a little aloof.
Yeah, like, he like doesn't really have like an online presence.
Yeah, Don Cheadle isn't writing a lifestyle guide for you. Though if he did, that's the one I would buy. Like I'm like, Don Cheadle, you're cool as shit. I'm fascinated by you. I vividly remember there was a video on Ben Schwartz's Instagram right after Don Cheadle won the Golden Globe or the Emmy for House of Lies. I don't remember which.
I think both at some point.
He came in like holding the award, like talking to people, like he wouldn't put it down. Like he's so funny. Aww. But like you only know that if you actually know Don Cheadle. And I love that. I love this idea that like he's just like a hot person who can act. He's a hot person with skills, or you actually know him. And that's actually the vibe I'm looking to give off in life is like, I'm just like a hot person that you don't know. And then like, if you know me, you like, we have fun together and it's great. But like the idea of how much I don't want to be known by strangers is something that Kara and I have talked about a lot lately. And all of you who have made the decision to follow me on the internet, like good for you. You're getting nothing. Go girl. Give us nothing.
Congratulations, queen. You've done it again. constantly raising the bar for all of us and doing it flawlessly.
Yeah, I have to watch Black Monday. I have to watch House of Lies, which I think is on Amazon.
Is it?
I think you have to buy it.
Yeah.
Or you can probably do it with a Showtime add-on.
I have a Showtime add-on on Hulu, so that's how I see both Black Monday. That's how I see Don Cheadle's work, because Don Cheadle has aligned himself to a network, and that network is Showtime, which is great because it's one of my favorite networks. I wouldn't say it's the best network, but it creates weird little shows, but it like almost has full prestige television, but it's willing to take like a dumb risk and do something that like HBO shows have a look and like a
vibe.
Nothing big's going to happen in any episode. It's like, you've got to watch 10 episodes for a single plot point to happen.
To pay off.
And like, yeah. Showtime will burn through plot almost at a network rate.
Wow.
But it'll also do some really prestige stuff along the way. Like,
maybe that's what I've been missing all this time.
Showtime is it for me. I wouldn't say it's like the best. My favorite shows of all time weren't on Showtime, but like, when I want to have fun, I watched all of The Affair, a show that you do not need to finish. Oh my God.
You did?
I'm sorry. Was Joshua Jackson on most of the seasons? Yeah, I watched all of The Affair.
Fair.
Oh my God. You know what season is terrible? The end. Cause by the end they had lost everybody. Cause it was such a terrible environment to work on that show.
Right.
That it was just down to Dominic West and Maura Tierney at the end.
Wow.
Well, that's been our celebrity book club, brought to you by Showtime.
Showtime, please sponsor us. Well, I think that sort of brings us to where we are at.
Yeah.
In our lives. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming on this journey of season 2 with us. This seems like as good a time as any to let you all know that we are taking a little break. We will be back in some form.
Yeah, we'll have some kind of content for you soon. That soon, though, is a really relative term.
Yeah.
We don't quite know what we're doing next.
We started doing this about a year ago.
Yep.
When our lives are still very much shut down. Carrie and I are now both vaccinated. And even though we are doing this over Zoom, very soon we'll be able to see each other IRL.
Yes. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And I think like we started doing this when we have a lot more free time. And yeah. The world is opening up, which makes it harder for us to keep up with reading a book every single week.
Yes.
So we're going to pause for a little bit. Kara and I are always going to continue working together in some shape or form. And so we know what that looks like and the next thing that we create that you'll be able to hear, we'll share that with you. It also may be more CBC. There are books still left to read.
Yeah.
There are stories still left to be told, but keeping up with it consistently is going to be a little hard for us right now. So we're taking a pause. Listen to our old eps.
FMOIG. A phrase that Carrie taught me in her Instagram-ness.
Yeah. So follow me on Instagram, FMOIG. And yeah, follow us for updates. And yeah.
Our merch is still available.
Oh, yeah. Buy our shit. I recommend the slouchy V-neck. That's what I purchased. It's very soft, very comfortable. I have a bisexual legend Cary Grant shirt. I will eventually collect them all. My laptop is covered in our stickers. Like, buy our merch. The brilliant, brilliant artist Molly Coyne has... Ooh. Made all this great stuff for us. So check it out, buy that.
Make sure you follow Molly Coyne's illustration Instagram at Molly Coyne Illustration. She's got some great projects coming up, not just her art, but also some performance opportunities Ooh. That she's getting to be a part of.
The brilliant Shanna McCrae has done all of our ad reads. Absolutely iconic. She has a production company you can follow as well called at Nacho Baby Productions. If you want to follow them, they're going to have some really cool audio content coming out. So if you miss CBC for a little while, but want to stay in the family, check out Nacho Baby and what they're working on.
So make sure you follow those lovely folks. I know you just hear mine and Carrie's voices, but there are a lot of other people who have helped us make this thing what it is. And
yeah, we have a pretty great team.
Yeah, we thank them.
And, And we'll have things for you soon. This is not a goodbye forever. This is a see you real soon kind of vibe.
Absolutely.
Okie dokie.
I said that.
Nope, I'm leaving it in forever.
No!
Don't forget to rate and review, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at CelebBookPod.
Carrie is on Twitter and Instagram at CFostTalksALot. That's the letter C, Fost, talks a lot.
You can find Kara at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Questions, comments, concerns, send us an email at celebritybookpod@gmail.com.
Tell us what you loved, what you hated, and what you want us to read next.
Thanks for listening. This has been Celebrity Book Club.